Oh, hello, I didn't see you there. This is Dr. Thaddeus Venture, and you're listening to the Long Box Guys. Whatever that means.
The Long Box Guy's gonna do tonight, Brain?
The same thing the Long Box Guys do every night, Pinky. Drink and talk about comics. They're useless at taking over the world. Yes!
Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of The Long Box Guys. With me, as always, are some of my very best friends since I was a very little kid. Mikey, how you doing, and what are you drinking?
I'm doing excellent today, and I am drinking a El Viso Mills Bavarian style Hefeweizen from Santa Clara Valley Brewing.
And are you podcasting from your house today?
I am.
It looks like the house of a serial killer. There is absolutely nothing on the walls behind you, and it looks like the stark, blank ravings of a madman trying to find an identity through murder.
If I was a serial killer, I'd have all my trophies hanging up behind me. Seriously. Like at my old house.
I didn't say you were a good serial killer.
Point of order, if he were a serial killer, he would have plastic everywhere to catch all the blood.
You don't kill in your own house. Come on, man.
Yeah.
That's serial killing son. 101.
Yeah.
I guess I have to take that course again. I got a C+. Maybe I really should have missed. I think I missed some stuff. Yeah. Tommy, how you doing and what are you drinking?
I'm doing okay. I am drinking some Winchester straight bourbon whiskey.
Oh, delicious. I've had that myself. It's good. Good to know you're not down to the cheap stuff yet. I myself am down to Thompson's Water Seal Scotch. When $14 is all you have for 2 gallons of scotch, Thompson's. Josh, you have much better taste than me. What are you drinking tonight?
Tonight I'm drinking a cloud candy from Mighty Squirrel Brewing from Waltham, Massachusetts.
Ooh, that sounds delicious. What is that like?
It's a nice, like, fluffy double IPA.
Double IPA. That's probably too intense of a flavor for me, correct?
Probably, yeah.
I'm a wimp. But you know who wasn't a wimp? Wesley Dodd, the original Sandman. And that's who we're going to be talking about today. I really enjoyed some of the early Mystery Men stuff, and Wesley Dodd was one of those early ones. Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about Wesley Dodd?
Well, Wesley Bernard West Dodds was...
Just because he got remarried twice to his lovers and changed his name doesn't mean you have to add everything.
And
who knew he married Wally West for a while?
He actually was never married. In fact, we're going to talk about that in a little bit. He was created by Gardner Fox and Bert Christman back in 1939, first appearing in either the New York World's Fair Comics number 1 or perhaps Adventure Comics number 40. It's really difficult to tell which one came out first or which one was written first. It's one of those two. If you ever have seen any of the Justice Society of America, Wesley Dodds was the Golden Age Sandman. He had a great look about him. It's reminiscent of the old pulps. He wore a suit, a green suit. He had a cape, and he had a purple fedora or a brown fedora, depending on who was drawing it, and a gas mask. And he was awesome. He was a chemist, an inventor. He was proficient in hand-to-hand combat. He was a detective. He had the gun that emitted sleeping gas or also gas to just choke people out, depending on what he needed. And he was gifted with dreams that would tell the future. And usually it involved crimes. And he had to try to figure out what those dreams meant. He was that. And then later on in the 1940s, they realized that superheroes had to have bright, shiny costumes and sidekicks. So even though his original adventures were very pulp detective oriented, and he had a partner in a woman named Diane Belmont, who was his girlfriend, but never his wife. And it was very interesting because in all of the other comic books at the time, like Lois Lane and for Superman, they were always the damsel in distress. But Diane Belmont was an equal partner. She had figured out who the Sandman was. The Sandman treated her as a partner, not as a damsel in distress. And she was written as a really tough broad. Then they decided we needed to make the Sandman a lot more appealing to kids. So they got rid of Diane Belmont. They brought in a boy sidekick, Sandy, the Golden Boy, and ruined the Sandman's awesome costume and put him in this purple and yellow costume. It was, ugh, it's ungodly. Why would you do that? Why, DC Comics? Why? Actually, it was probably National Comics at the time, but whatever.
Not since Ultraman has there been a more horrific display of ugly colors in one costume.
Yes. So he was a founding member of the Justice Society of America because he was so popular. He had an ongoing run in Adventure Comics. And, that's just basically it. I'm sure we're going to be talking about some of our favorite series and we can go into more detail. Like LT, I know you've read a bunch of Sandman.
Yeah, I really liked Matt Wagner's Sandman Mystery Theater that ran in the 90s. My favorite was...
We drink when we agree on the show. We're going to be drinking a lot.
My favorite was the Face and the Brute, where he was investigating some grisly murders in Chinatown. It's a little bit tough to take... in today's vernacular, because it really does kind of illustrate the racism that was going on in the 30s towards the Oriental races. It was very, very in that language and in that sort of tone. It was really, really badly demonstrating that.
One example of that I just want to add there, they really, when they were talking about anyone of Asian descent, they really only had two tropes, and that was the hulking, monstrous, mongoloid-looking brutes and the tricky, overly buck-tooth, super-intelligent, mean little savages. And there was nothing in between, and that particular comic book really showed those two tropes in all their ugliness over and over again.
Not in that comic series.
In the 90s, it didn't have that, but it had language that was reflective of the racism that was going on. And Diane Belmont was dating an Asian character, and it showed her father, trying to prohibit her from doing so and acting really untowards her boyfriend and her for dating him. And it really went through all of that. But if you take it, if you looked at the comic and saw that Matt Wagner was doing it intentionally to show the racism, it really was a good, well-written comic, but it really does show a lot of the racism that went on in the early 20s and 30s and 40s in America.
Yeah, my mistake there. I thought you were talking about some of the earlier ones. My favorite ones, and I do like that one too, but my favorite ones are some of the very first early ones where he's fighting spies and Nazis and the Japanese. And that's one of the ones I thought you were talking about, because I've seen and read a bunch of those. And like I said, the two tropes of the Asian characters, really, really ugly drawn. And very racist there. So I'm glad that they took a chance and, used the Sandman to, kind of make up for some of those past mistakes and help us on that arc towards normalcy. The Sandman was a terrific comic book. And if we ever have another show where we argue greatest of all time, cool costumes, I really love the original look of the Sandman. That was just a classic Mystery Man look. One of the best ever. I mean, him and the Spirit, like, really caught that Mystery Man feel for me.
Yeah, and also in that whole Sandman Mystery Theater, he really was almost like a Batman-type character. He was, rich. He developed a lot of his own tools of the trade. He worked independently in most of it, kind of, in parallel with Diane Belmont. you know, he had a lot of nifty gadgets. He had his sleep gas gun. He had his car outfitted with different gadgets to avoid being being followed. He had his trench coat lined with bulletproof plates so that if he got shot at, he wouldn't get badly injured. You know, he really was almost like a Batman type character, but not quite at Batman's level.
I agree with you. I think Sandman Mystery Theater, if you're going to read anything, it's 70 issues of amazing stuff. And it was one of the first Vertigo titles along with Sandman. It was kind of run in conjunction with it. Matt Wagner wanted to retell those classic tales and give it a noir feel, and that's what it definitely has. It's always a detective story. It's always got the noir feel, and it always shows the horrible underside of the city of Manhattan at the time when this is taking place. The first two collections are available on Comixology Unlimited. So if you have one of those accounts, go check it out. You can find these criminally underrated books in dollar bins and quarter bins all over the place because, and I don't know why, because it's such a great series. If I'm going to recommend one comic for you to read, that's going to be Sandman Mystery Theater Annual Number 1. And the reason I tell you this one is because it's drawn, even though it's all written by Matt Wagner, it's drawn by different artists who were artists of the series, because each series is like 3 or 4 issues long storyline-wise, and it's drawn by different artists. And the annual focuses in on a different supporting character of the Sandman at different points. And it tells the story of the Sandman having a prophetic dream about a mugger and then tracking him down and trying to find this mugger in Central Park. And his solution, after he finally finds the mugger, is so out of the box thinking for what you view as a typical comic book. Because instead of just, he finds the guy, he captures him, and finds out the guy had lost his job and has been mugging people because he's trying to feed his family and keep a roof over their head. And so he knocks him out with the knockout gas, strips him of all his clothing, throws him into his own, the guy's own bed. He wakes up with a pile of cash because Wesley Dodds is rich. And a little note from the Sandman saying, basically, this is your one and only opportunity to turn your life around. If I find you again, I won't be as generous. Neil Adams, when he talks about how Bruce Wayne could do more than Batman, this is showing how Sandman learned that lesson back in the 1930s and early 40s.
I agree. That's a terrific one. And that really does show that what Neil Adams had told us in person, that, you know, a rich philanthropist is actually with a heart is better than a playboy billionaire with a bunch of gadgets running around in the night beating up bad guys.
Why not both?
Why not both?
Josh, you got any Sandman stories to recommend?
I don't, actually. I completely forgot what the topic was this week. I did no research and found out just when this podcast started that we were doing Wesley Dodds. And I do have to say, it's kind of a cosplay I want to do, even though I don't know the character that well.
But it's a great costume, right?
It's a great costume, yeah.
It seems hotter than shite.
It does. Yeah. It is not a Florida cosplay. It no, is more it of is an Alaska not. Cosplay. I the character is intriguing, and I like the idea and everything. So you can definitely see where just the influence came from, right? There's just so much that comes out of this character on the other side that it's interesting to go back and sort of explore where some of our favorite characters came from.
Yeah, he really was a big influence on a lot of other characters to come later. One that we can definitely – I'm not really sure which came first, but the Shadow and this character sometimes have a lot in common, including girlfriends. Margot Lane for The Shadow was another one that was pretty much an equal, not a damsel in distress by any means, often saving The Shadow and jumping into the comics as someone who could hold their own. Maybe a little more damsel in distress than Belmont, but definitely a force of nature also, and someone who did figure out the protagonist's identity.
Yeah, and if you also want to read some of the older stories where you can see Diane Belmont kick some ass, go check out some of the early Justice Society adventures in All-Star Comics, because in those comics, typically, all the men folk go out on a separate adventure to try to solve the overarching problem of the story. And when Sandman has Diane Belmont there, he's not afraid to just say, "Diane, here's a gun. Hold these guys till the police get there and just take off." And Diane's like, "Yeah, I'll shoot you, you bastards. Don't even think about it."
And we all know that the B storyline is better sometimes, right, Tommy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So The Shadow actually, Tom, I looked this up. People don't believe that I knew this off the top of my head. The Shadow Detective Story Hour started in 1930. It's about 9 years before Dodd.
Yeah, I believe that, absolutely. But you can see how they influenced.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
totally see the influence. But those guys were all influencing each other at the time. That's an American – that pulp nut genre was an American art form that took place incredibly rapidly, and they were all kind of working with each other and against each other and influencing each other. It was a huge, huge mix of ideas at the time, and of course, patent rights were a little more spongy, shall we say, spongy at the time,
and, or unenforced. I'm making air quotes, people.
Well, that's before the mouse.
You know what? No, you didn't. Fuck you.
That's true. I didn't. I actually just said.
I make air quotes.
I make air quotes. I was pouring my beer and couldn't actually make them.
Yeah, we'll do it now.
I verbally tricked our audience.
I think
it's actually making air quotes. Carry on. I'm sorry.
And a couple fun facts about Wesley Dodds, which one, his father fought in World War I, and that's his father's gas mask that he's wearing. He always thought that his father was cold and distant and was suffering from PTSD after the war, but never would talk to him about it. And that's a great little storyline for Wesley Dodds as to why he dons that particular mask. And then the second is Sandman and Sandman Mystery Theater were both Vertigo titles running at the same time. And we've already talked in length. Go check out that episode where we discussed the Sandman series by Neil Gaiman. In 1995, Gaiman was loving the work that Matt Wagner was doing on Sandman Mystery Theater, and they collaborated to write a one-shot called Sandman Midnight Theater, which tells why Wesley Dodds had prophetic dreams. It's because Sandman was captured and had left the dreaming, and Wesley was inheriting some of Dream's powers without knowing it. So, very cool series. If you're a Gaiman fan, you want to check that out.
Or a Wagner fan.
Yeah.
Either one. Yeah. One last thing I want to say about the Sandman is how hard they seem to work just shitting all over that character. When they changed him to that star-spangled golden blue and yellow and crazy-colored idiots, the Sandman who traveled into dreams and protected children and had the boy sidekick. His power set was insane, and his solenoid gun eventually gave Sandy the ability to become silicon-based, a silicon-based life form. The whole thing is ridiculous and, to me, an absolute toss-away.
And it actually is a horrible storyline in the fact that Sandy became trapped in the silicon state where he couldn't – he was a monster, and Wesley kept on trying to solve it. But rather than going to, I don't know, Mr. Terrific, who is one of the smartest guys he knows, Batman, any of the other scientists on the Justice Society, or going to Dr. Fate or Spectre asking for help for his sidekick. He just leaves him in a suspended animation where Sandy is totally cognizant of what's going on around him but can't do anything for over 40 years. So they really have done a disservice to Wesley Dodds, the Sandman, in that storyline. So whoever did that, I wish I could remember the name of the guy who came up with that storyline, but fuck you. This guy's a great character. How dare you do that to him?
Hey, are you going to be working on my hole? I'm trapped in a tube, and I'm sand, and I suck. No, we're going to go fight Skrulls. Well, they're not going to fight Skrulls. We're going to go fight, you know,
the icicle.
Something.
We're going to go fight Faraday.
You're going to fight the icicle? I'm living in hell. And you're going to fight the ice? Can't someone else fight the ice?
Sorry, man. I'd love to solve this problem, but there's a mugger in Central Park. I got to take care of
it. I've been dreaming about it like you wouldn't believe. Hey, can you dream about why I'm fucking sand?
Can somebody at least roll a TV in here?
You know what? How about the ER? Let's do this. Let's just go to the ER. We'll have a doctor take a look at me. Maybe something will happen. I don't know. This might actually be something that can be solved with an IV. You don't know. I've been here 35 years.
You haven't even tried. You're not trying.
Tried an IV? How about a peanut butter sandwich? I know I'm saying. I don't give a shit. Peanut butter's delicious.
Fun Alex fact. Probably the greatest origami-making superhero of all time. There, I said it.
Wow.
Oh.
You know, Mike, I'm going to agree with you.
You said probably. You left yourself a fucking back door, you chicken.
All right, I'm going to go. He is the greatest origami maker in comic book history.
All right. I'll have to find someone to...
Prove me wrong.
And I only know one other character even that does origami as often.
Oh, who's that?
That is one of the detectives in Android's Dream of Electric Sheep. Also showed up in Blade Runner and the Blade Runner comic book as the detective that was following the Blade Runner.
Yeah.
He himself a Blade Runner. Yeah.
Yep. That's one of the very few that I can think of right at the top of my head.
Apparently, there's also a villain in Teenage Mutant Turtles, and his name is Origami Tsunami.
Origami Tsunami.
All right, that's a great name. I'm going to give you that's a great name, but other than giving people a lot of paper cuts with some paper swans, I don't see how effective.
If he had the power of Riptide, everyone remembers Riptide, but he was also doing super fast origami and shooting those fucking swans out at you, those paper cuts could be nasty.
What if he had the power to make origami into real things?
Ooh, like a tattoo man origami guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That
would be stupid.
Yeah, that'd be totally stupid.
Totally stupid.
We should write that.
Yeah, let's write that. It's better than the fucking Sandman is now a guy who jumps into children's dreams and protects them from nightmares.
Are you talking about – you're talking about Jack Kirby's Sandman, which was – God awful. Holy shit. It is unreadable. Oh, I dare you. Go ahead. Try to read it. Try.
And don't get us wrong. We worship the ink from Jack Kirby's pen. Usually. But this was one of those old timey phone ins. Like, oh, I don't know. He jumps into kids' dreams. I'm getting a blowjob and having a cigar and a steak. Leave me alone. Is this Pensacola 45555? That's how I imagine that entire comic book got written.
And now, I don't know if this has been a comic or was manga before it was turned into anime, but Kubo and the Two Strings, he was in an Origami Kid. Also, great movie if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
I haven't seen it yet. I'll take time for that.
Yeah, take some time. Watch that. It's good.
That sounded like a tangent.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
Yeah. Josh, do you have a tangent for us this week?
Yeah. Kubo and the Two Strings. Man, if you haven't seen that movie, what the hell is wrong with you?
What is
a fantastic film. It is such a layered film, and one of the great things about it is at the end, they show you a lot of the making of the film, and you don't even realize as you're going through the film that a lot of it isn't animated, it's puppetry. And so as I sat there, and you watch this like climactic battle where they're trying to get the Sword of Destiny essentially out of this giant skeleton skull, and I was like, wow, that was a really great scene. And then they go back and actually show that the skeleton and almost everything in the background is actually puppetry and is like cables and wires and is stop motion, and you find out just how much of that film is stop motion. It's like real paper, real origami, real puppetry. You're just like, wow. I was blown away at the end of that movie. It's a great soundtrack. It's a beautiful movie. Everybody should see that movie.
How could it be? The fucking kid only had two strings.
Yeah.
It's not even a chord, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And look what that kid could do with two strings. Imagine if he had five, Tom.
Wow.
Yeah.
I got four of my ukulele. I can barely get out drunk in the sailor. That's only two chords.
Yeah. So I guess my side thing is movies that surprise you right at the very end. You were like, oh, this is a good movie, but then something right at the end, or maybe even post-credit, turned the movie, like, made it just kicked it up a notch.
For me, the first thing that comes to mind is The Sixth Sense. I was like, what? Oh, yeah. Well done, M. Night Shyamalan. You'll never do that to me again. And I was right. I was right.
I was right.
I was absolutely right.
The village had a horn on that plot line that if you didn't see it coming, you're the idiot. The village?
Yeah.
Pretty much all of his movies post Sixth Sense, yeah.
I did like Glass.
It was fine, but there was no twist that surprised me.
Well, yeah. You're right. It wasn't really a big twist. I mean, I kind of thought I was watching a superhero movie for way into it until the big twist was it's a superhero movie. Yeah, okay. I know. I'm watching it.
All right. I was surprised, but not pleasantly surprised, that aliens decided to go to a plant that's 75% water.
No, you can't get me started on Signs, Mike. All right. Can't just jump in with the least logical film in the history of fucking film.
All right. Well, I'm just going to restrain myself. I'm just going to stick with The Sixth Sense.
Stick with The Sixth Sense on that. My tangent next week is just going to be me bitching about Signs for 20 minutes, and Mike's just going to have to cut it out anyway.
I was going
to
say, it is so easy for me to find films that were great right up until the end.
But we're looking for the opposite.
Turn it around at the end.
I know. I'm just saying, Mike, yeah. It is so easy for me to identify that. I'm going to say The Royal Tenenbaums. The Royal Tenenbaums, it was fantastic, and I did not see the end coming that way. And it was still brilliant.
And so the end to make that movie that much better for you? Because I liked
did.
The whole movie.
I loved the whole movie, but I did not see the end coming with his tombstone.
The end's got to make it so much better. Like, it's got to turn the movie around in some way.
It does, because I was never expecting his tombstone to, one, for him to actually die, and two, for his tombstone to be read that way.
You know, there was a movie that I hated right up until the end, so I guess this absolutely counts. Independence Day. Independence Day for me was total schlock the whole way in, and then fucking Randy Quaid saves the goddamn day. Fat, chubby, alcoholic, everybody's grand, racist uncle at the kitchen table who no one wants to talk to right off the bat says, fuck it, I'm going to be the hero.
It's a totally acceptable answer.
Thank you.
Yeah, totally. That is totally on point.
Yeah. I was like, this is – all right. It's a couple of good special effects. All right. Okay. What? That could be me.
That hero could be me.
Hi, I'm Cynthia Rothrock, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Mikey, what do you got at the front of the long box this week?
At the front of the long box, I have Earth 2. It was a DC comic series a few years ago that was the New 52 retelling of the classic Golden Age heroes. I was in a Golden Age kind of mood after reading a shit ton of Sandman Mystery Theater, so I picked them up, started reading them, and yeah, it just doesn't hit the mark. I was reading them free on DC Universe, so I don't feel like too slighted. I love the Justice Society of America. It's just not, this retelling is not my jam. Wesley Dodds in this, it's the Sandman and his Sandmen. They're a covert action squad. Yeah.
Ooh, who can do the intro? Sandman and his Sandmen. Do, 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 do.
Sure, that would have actually been more entertaining than the book.
Okay.
But I'm sorry for dissing what I hate. Let's talk about something. Let's promote something we love. LT, I love you.
Sue. Thanks, Meg.
Oh, you thought I was just doing a segue? I'm not stealing Tom's shit. I'm just saying, I love you, man.
I appreciate that, Mike. I love you, too.
Speaking of stealing shit, Tommy, what do you got in the back of the long box?
I've got JSA, The Liberty Files, number 1 and 2 from the Elseworlds genre in DC. Came out in 1999. The first one is Batman and Captain Midnight and Hourman trying
mean,
to find.
You mean what? Dr. Midnight? Captain Midnight was a Dark Horse comic.
Sorry, Dr. Midnight. Trying to track down Jack the Grin, a.k.a. the Joker, to find these Nazi plans for a new plane. And they're in Egypt trying to track him down. And it was a great sort of pulpy World War II storyline. And it was great. And then the second one was sort of a continuation of that. But they were tracking down sort of the Nazi super soldier that there was rumored to be, and it's alluded in the whole comic book that it's going to be Superman, and then there's a twist reveal at the end.
Just like The Sixth Sense.
Just like The Sixth Sense.
Just like just Independence like, Day.
Exactly like that.
And it's they were both pretty well done. So, Mikey, they're available on the DC app. So you don't have to spend a lot of money on them. But
Tom,
I would say go.
Those actually sound really, really right up my alley. Will you email me those so I can put them on our Twitter page and also I can read them myself for certain? Because sure. Those sound like perfect for me. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they were both really well done.
Today on my little segment that I sometimes call 3 to 18, Rate It, something that Mikey introduced me to at a comic book convention years ago. And now I can't go to a convention without them. Smucker's PB&J frozen goddamn sandwiches. On a scale of 3 to 18, how much do you love or hate these things?
Uncrustables?
You mean Uncrustables.
Uncrustables.
So good.
It's the perfect stupid-ass food for a convention. Because you put them in your pocket frozen. You walk around like an idiot all day. And boom, they're nice and warm. Mikey, what's your number?
You know what? I'm going to give it, as far as con food goes, I'm going to give it an 18.
High number indeed.
I'm going to go with an 18. I think I agree with you. It is the perfect con food to bring with you. It's got the protein in it. It's going to build you up. You throw the frozen ones in your backpack, not in your pocket. You're disgusting, Tom. But by the time you read it, you're ready to eat it. Good to go.
Tom likes a little something frozen down his pants.
Tom, you've had these with us. What do you think?
I'm going to give it like a 14 because I should not be having that much sugar, but they are delicious.
It's true. We have tried to kill you with those.
Have you had these?
I have never consumed an Uncrustable.
An Uncrustable is crazy good, but it's not crazy good anywhere else to me. Like, I would never think of going to the fridge because they're so stupid to have in the house because you have to take them out. And you're supposed to put them in the refrigerator to thaw them out for like 4 hours, and then you can put them in the toaster. Fuck you, Uncrustable. I don't have all day to wait for a snack.
Seriously, it's a peanut butter sandwich that takes 4 hours and 11 minutes to make? This doesn't make any sense to me.
That's insane, why you right? don't have it at your house. There's no point in having it except for going to a con with it.
Yeah, but if you put it frozen in your backpack, by midday, it's ready to rock and roll. You eat it the way it is, like a regular peanut butter sandwich instead of a toasted peanut butter sandwich is what they think it should be, idiots. And you're good to go. Next time we're at a con, we'll bring a couple along. I never had one of these until Mike said, hey, eat this. Like, all right, I'm an idiot. And boom, I'm going to give it a nice solid 16. Can't quite give it the 18 because it's not giving me a hand job also. But it is awesome.
It's pretty good.
Okay.
Josh, we're going to put this in your mouth. You're going to love it.
My mouth.
Put in your mouth.
Why? Quit trying to kill Josh, too.
Yeah.
I wanted you all dead, and you know it. You knew what this was when we started this podcast.
That's true. It's fair.
Wow, they have peanut butter and honey ones. I'm not a big jam or grape jelly fan, but they have peanut
Josh,
butter and honey.
Josh, honest to God, neither am I. I swear to you, I'm not a jelly fan or a grape jelly fan. These stupid things are just good.
I don't need it. They have a peanut butter and honey one. I don't need your jelly, pal.
Well, let's do a peanut butter and honey one together, buddy.
And they have them on wheat bread to give you the illusion that they're healthy.
Yeah.
or to help you poop, one of the two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't
need help poop. Yeah.
It's actually not that bad.
It's not horrific. It's like it's better than most of the con food we'd be consuming.
Yeah.
It's just you could buy a loaf of bread, a jar of peanut butter, and a jar of jelly, honey, whatever you want, and make a lot more than what you pay for these sandwiches.
But then you got to go to the trouble of sealing it and freezing it.
And taking the crust off.
And taking the crust off because they are uncrustable.
Yeah.
So you got to invent a dye press. Do you want to really make a dye press?
A little bit of irony. If you throw them in the refrigerator, they're only good until they're thawed out for a few hours. If you wait a few days after you've thawed them out, they actually become crusty.
Yeah, disgusting, actually. I found that out the hard way. I'm like, maybe I'll want one of these tomorrow, so I'll thaw them out. Yeah,
nope.
No, can't do that.
You got to be like, in about 4 or 5 hours, I'll want to eat this. That's what you
have. You don't.
It's like a baked potato. You got to know when you want to eat that baked potato. Because you got an hour, hour and a half minimum to plan for being hungry for a baked potato. That's your window, folks. That's what you got for baked potato.
Yeah.
Mikey, bring us over to plugs.
Well, I'd like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing our geek rock music every week. You can check him out at kirbycracklemusic.com. Also, we should always thank our fellow podcasters, especially Seth Myers over at Who's Next Gaming. If you haven't been listening to Who's Next Gaming, it's great. They've switched their format up a little bit. I like that they're talking about comic books a little bit more than they used to. Big fan of that. And their other podcast, Movies So Bad They're Good, also a great podcast. Check them out. You can find all their links over at whosnextgaming.com. Don't go to just whosnext.com. That is Bill Goldberg's website. Oh, and I got to thank a couple other comic book stores who have provided me a shit ton of awesome comics. And they are all in the Framingham, Massachusetts area, which I never get to go visit. The Hall of Comics was very nice. When I went there, I found a couple Warlord issues that I didn't have. I told the guy that when he asked me about them, I said, my dad used to collect this comic. I'm trying to finish off his collection. And he looked at me and said, they're free. They're all yours. Don't worry about it. And I saw a little tear forming in his eye because he apparently had a dad who collected comics too. It was very nice of him and very unexpected, right, LT?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It was.
And what was that other awesome comic book shop you brought me to where I spent a shit ton of money?
It was Bedrock Comics, my local comic book shop, which we've plugged on this podcast before. A great little comic book shop on Worcester Road in Framingham, Mass.
Found a whole bunch of Justice League, the Silver Age stuff that I need to add to my collection, so I was happy to get that. And I got the very second appearance of Titano, the Super Ape.
I'd like to thank our friends at GeekOrthodox.com.
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 Hello, Tammy.
They're down at Dragon Con this weekend. Of course, you're going to hear this about the weekend after Dragon Con. But they're having a great time. I just watched a video that our friends Sword and Beers posted about a walkthrough of their comic book, about their booth. They look like they're having a terrific time selling a lot of stained glass prints and stained glass. Of course, they also have great T-shirts and socks and barware. Highly recommend them. GeekOrthodox.com. Go check them out. Josh, you got something to plug?
Sure. Friendly Neighborhood Comics. Also, Ananacon coming up December 6th this year. I might be teaching my longsword classes again there if they allow it. But also a good tabletop role-playing place if you want to come down and play some games. I believe it's in New Haven, Connecticut.
And that's going to do it from us here over at the Longbox, guys. Once again, we really do appreciate you. Check us out on Twitter at the Longbox Guys, // at Twitter, and also our Patreon page. Did I get lazy on that, Mikey? Did I?
Yeah, you got totally lazy.
I got totally lazy on that. What is that? At the Longbox Guys?
Yeah.
At the Longbox. They know that. They're not morons. These are our listeners. These are highly educated people. They're going to know that Tom fucked up and put an at in the front of it.
Yeah, you put the // at the back of it.
I was never good with the /s or /s. They just look like little lines. I have terrible cornea scratches.
But you were saying something about Patreon.
Yeah, you should check out our Patreon page. Also, at the Longbox Guys.
No.
// at Patreon.
Patreon.com/TheLongboxGuys.
/TheLongboxGuys. We had a fun little thing going back and forth with a couple of our folks concerning superheroes last week. What did we do last week? Did anyone remember what it was? Something kind of fun.
It's always fun.
It's always fun. Greatest of all time. I can't remember what it was. We just did one, greatest of all time islands. We had a great time with that because there are a lot of fun islands that people visit. And then Tom tried to ruin it by saying New York.
Whoa, yeah,
don't look,
whoa.
Don't look whoa. Back.
Whoa, whoa. Whoa,
pump the brakes.
Yeah.
First of all, LT's not wrong that Manhattan is one of
Manhattan
the greatest
was one of the greatest islands. Superhero islands.
And two, stop giving away our picks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent point. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Settle down.
Mikey, what is this podcast like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comics.
Tommy, sweet, sweet Tommy, whom I love more than life itself. Any words for us?
If somebody wants to give me a job, I'm open for offers.
We'll administrate for food. Josh, where is Ananacon going to be, by the way?
Somewhere in Southern Connecticut.
Southern Connecticut. Let me just ask, just off the top of my head, just in case I'm mistaken, isn't that your sector?
Nope, not my sector.
If they hire you, is it your sector?
Then it becomes my sector a little bit.
It becomes your sector. And don't forget what I always say. Don't diss what you hate. Just promote what you love. You're going to live a lot longer. That's going to do it from the Longbox, guys. Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Pop Culture Con. We're happy to say your submission for horrible, horrible, horrible stereotypes in comic books has been approved, and we're looking forward to hosting you at the Reno Pop Culture Con, November 8th to 10th. Please note that your panel titles may have been edited for format and clarity. We look forward to working with you in the coming months, and we will be sending you additional information, including session guidelines, promotion policies, and information on how to receive your complimentary attendee badge.